Radical elites are making a brazen attempt to overthrow the nation's court system. They want to force the Supreme Court to align with the tyrannical authority. I'm Stuart Shepard, and this is part of our series on the Supreme Court coup that's currently being attempted in Washington, D.C. We have a white paper on our website, supremecoup.com, that has a lot of detail about this. If you want to dig into it a bit and understand it better, it unpacks the facts, the history, and the destructive consequences were this to be pushed through. And that's why we have our guest today. His name is Patrick Gary. He's an author of the white paper that I was just talking about. He's also a law professor who specializes in constitutional history. He's written numerous books, both fiction and nonfiction, but one of the nonfiction ones is specifically on religious liberty and the courts. Hi, Patrick.
Hello, Stuart.
Good to have you with us today. Thanks for being here. This is not the first time that there's been an effort to add seats to the Supreme Court. Give us a little bit of history.
Yes, in fact, that's oftentimes a claim that's made by the progressive left in terms of this campaign now to pack the court. So this really goes back to the late years of the John Adams presidency. John Adams was the second president. Throughout the early to mid 19th century, there were numerous attempts to change the size of the court. Now, most of the attempts were just simply to change the court so as to accommodate it to the ability to hear cases. Back, for instance, in the early part of the 19th century, Supreme Court justices would have to what they call ride the circuit. They'd Right. have to go out into the different states in the federal circuits and hear cases. So as the nation grew, you had to have more judges. That's the vast number of times that the court has been changed.
Yeah.
But there's two instances in which a attempted change wasn't tied to this circuit riding. So to kind of bring us up to date, then all of those changes in the past have nothing to do with the current attempt to change the court, because there's no claim that the court needs more members to be able to hear more cases.
And it's important to point out, and you kind of alluded to this, but we're talking circuit riding. We mean literally on a horse going from courthouse to courthouse.
That's right. Literally on a horse and riding, you know, those old dusty early 18th century roads, and they couldn't handle it with the justices they had, so they had to add more.
Now, court packing would result in a number of threats to our freedoms. And I want to go through those one at a time. And these are ones that you detail in the white paper that you wrote for us. First, the threat to judicial independence. When you talk about that, explain for us what that means and what the impact would be.
Well, of course, the court has to be independent. And that's what we think of it, because the court has to sit in judgment of the laws that the Congress passes and that the executive enforces. And so it's part of our sort of three-branch checks and powers scheme of government. The court has to be the judge. And to be the judge, you have to be independent of the legislative and executive branch. Court packing, as it's attempted now, is really an effort of Congress to manipulate the decisions of the court. They want to expand the court, not just because the court needs more members. They want to expand the court to change the makeup of the court so that decisions will be changed. That's a direct impact and manipulation, really, of the independence and decisions of the court. It's as if Congress is telling the court, we don't like your decisions. We want new and different decisions, and we're going to get the membership on the court until we get those decisions.
Right. Now, you mentioned this in the description of that, but there's also the threat to the separation of powers. Our government's split up into three distinct branches. You've got the legislative, the executive, and the judicial, and we all learned that in high school. But this would unbalance that. It would, in a sense, subsume the judiciary under the legislative branch. To explain why that's a danger and what the impact would be.
Well, sure, separation of powers is really one of the foundational principles and doctrines of our Constitution. We separate the powers and branches of government so as to provide some kind of checks and balance, so we don't have one branch, for instance, that achieves, absolute power or near absolute power. And so the three different branches exist in a kind of checking and balancing function. That's why we have, for instance, with the Supreme Court, we have lifetime tenure. One of the reasons of lifetime tenure is so that judges cannot be influenced in their decision making by the executive or legislative branch. And we're very protective of that. And it's almost commonsensical that you cannot have a court sitting in judgment of actions of Congress that is then the court subject to manipulations and influences by Congress. We clearly don't want Congress to tell the court how to judge its laws. And this court packing attempt really is a way that the Congress is directly impacting and inserting itself into this equation. If Congress can, by court packing, change the decisions of the court, there is no longer any separation of powers. The court becomes subservient to Congress. The court becomes a simple agent of Congress, doing whatever Congress wants it to do.
My son and I were talking about this whole thing this past weekend, and I was explaining to him, it may be an oversimplification, but I was explaining that basically if you're on the progressive or liberal side of things, there's a presumption that people are inherently good and they'll always make good choices. We're always looking out for the good of society. The conservative point of view actually assumes that people are inherently self-interested and in a sense greedy, that we're always going to look out for ourselves. And that's why the separation of powers is necessary to push back on that. Would you agree with that oversimplification of the whole setup?
Yeah, I would, Stuart. Actually, what you're describing is going way back into to the French philosopher Rousseau. That's what Rousseau thought. Remember, Rousseau was oftentimes lined up with the French Revolution. On the other hand, the English philosopher Burke had more of the conservative approach that you described also. I think you kind of summed that up very well, as if don't have any, in other words, and I'm not sure that it's the current progressive view, but certainly the longstanding liberal view is don't put any roadblocks in front of people, because people just left to themselves will inherently find the best result and do and achieve the greatest happiness. Yet conservatives have not agreed with that approach, partly because, of course, we inherently, see the sinfulness of humanity. Yeah. And that there has to be some kind of connection. That's what really gave birth to separation of powers, is that even as James Madison recognized, you want to have ambition counteract ambition. Each of the three branches are going to be ambitious in their sense. And so use that to contradict each other and to check so that one doesn't proceed without any type of restraint. I think that's a good sort of example and a good sort of basic description and distinction between the two points of view. I think Rousseau has turned out to be very naive in his outlook. Of course, you look at what happened to the French Revolution. It started off with all great intentions, right? And what did it end? It ended with the guillotine.
Yeah.
Terrible end, that beginning that had so much promise.
I will tell my son that you have declared me as smarter than Rousseau. He'll be impressed by that.
I so do, yes.
Hey, over the years, because they're humans and because they're given to the very things we were just talking about, Congress has a regular thing of passing laws that really don't meet with the Constitution. They don't measure up to the Constitution. And that brings us to the next threat, because the courts play an important role in examining laws that are passed and asking whether it measures up to the Constitution. They're supposed to hold it up to it and say, is this constitutional or not? This attempt to overthrow the court really is a direct threat on judicial review. Unpack that for us.
Yeah, so, well, judicial review is then the tool, really, by which separation of powers works itself out. We have separation of powers, but it's really the tool of judicial review in which the court asserts itself into the process. By judicial review, the court has the power under the Constitution, as first stated by Justice Marshall, to overturn acts of Congress, declaring them unconstitutional. That is the power of the court. That's really the only tool the court has. The court's oftentimes depicted as the weakest branch because it really only has that power. And in fact, it has to rely on the goodwill of the other branches because the other branches really put into effect the court's decisions. All the court can do is declare an act unconstitutional. It's up to the president and it's up to Congress to respect that judgment. So built into this is a required respect by the other branches. I think that's something we're seeing a stark absence of now, this respect that's required, because judicial review is really the only tool that the court has, and it's a constitutionally granted tool, and it's a tool that that is necessary within the constitutional scheme, because what else can you do to check Congress, and doesn't Congress have to abide by the Constitution?
Very good. Let's talk about the impact. First Liberty Institute, of course, is specifically focused on religious freedom. We're focused on that first part of the first clause of the First Amendment and the second part of the free exercise of religion in particular. How would court packing be a threat to religious freedom, to our religious liberty?
Well, I think, first of all, we start with the assumption that why is court packing occurring? Why do progressives want to pack the court? The answer is, the only answer, and this is not an argument on my part, this is not a supposition on my part, this is what the progressives say. They don't like the decisions that are being given by the court.
Right.
You really saw that during the confirmation hearings and confirmation arguments involving Justice Barrett. They did not like, and particularly were suspicious of, her views on religious liberty. And so this court packing plan is directly tied up with those decisions that the progressive left doesn't like. And it particularly doesn't like the notion of religious liberty. It has made itself very clear on that point. And so I think that's really the beginning. Now, there's a number of other, you know, decisions that's going to be impacted by this. But I think religious liberty is right at the front and center, because that seems to be the absolute prime object of the progressive concern and the progressive attack. I mean, if you look at the hearings involving Justice Barrett, I mean, that was... they were concerned primarily with her religious liberty law decisions.
And if history is clear about anything, it's this. If religious freedom goes, if religious liberty goes, if our protections of that particular aspect of our lives goes, all of our other freedoms are at risk and will soon fall as well.
Yes, I think so. I mean, for one thing, just to state an obvious point, is that it's as you understand in your institute, it's the first freedom that the founders articulated. It's the freedom that really led to the European settlement of America. That's why people didn't come here to have a democracy. They didn't come here to engage in a free enterprise capitalistic system. They came here for religious liberty. That defined the vast majority of the colonies to begin with. It really did so much to shape this country. And it's a different freedom than every other freedom, because if you think of it, religious freedom isn't just the individual should be free to, like speech, for instance. We think the individual should be free to engage in speech. We don't make any judgment of what that speech is all about, and we don't care. But religious liberty is something different. It's a freedom, but underlying that freedom then is a belief by the individual that there is a higher law that transcends the individual and transcends this world. So there is something so much more important about it. If you don't respect individual religious liberty, you really can't respect any kind of foundational dignity or principle of freedom.
I really appreciate your clarity of thinking on this. It's helping me to have a better view of it, and I hope for our viewers as well that they'll be able to articulate this more clearly when we get in conversations about it with people we know. Is there anything else you'd like to share before I let you go that we should know as we engage in this conversation here in our country?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a big moment. It's a big moment because we talk about all of the decisions of the court, but this is really much more foundational than just simply decision. This is what's going to lead to and shape the court for, you know, possibly decades or centuries to come. And I think it's just a very dangerous road that the left is taking us down.
Very good. Dr. Patrick Gary, thank you so much for making time for us today. I really appreciate your insights. Very good stuff.
Thank you, Stuart. It's just been great to talk with you.
And if you'd like to go deeper on this topic, you can read the entire white paper that Dr. Gary wrote for us. It's at supremecoup.com. It's called The Constitutional Dangers of Court Packing. It's free. We want you to have it because we think the more people that can engage in this conversation, in this debate that our nation is having with clarity and with intelligence and with history behind us, we're convinced that that will help us to push back against this threat. And in coming weeks, you'll hear from Kelly Shackelford and Mike Berry and Jeremy Dice, our attorneys here at First Liberty Institute. I'm Stuart Shepard. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.